Women have been giving birth for centuries, so it's a pretty natural experience, right? Wrong. I'm Stephanie King, professional doula, childbirth educator, and the creator of the My Essential Birth course, the online childbirth education course that's helping women everywhere confidently achieve their best birth. Today's culture would have us think that birth should be treated like an illness or an emergency, and that most of us need other people telling us what's best for our bodies because we aren't the experts. So sit tight, because if you're tuning into this podcast, you'll probably start to believe in your body, your intuition, and find yourself empowered and confident to do what it takes to have the birth of your dreams. If you like listening to me take you through these weekly topics step by step, then you're going to love the My Essential Birth course. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast and definitely head over to myessentialbirth.com for the free downloads mentioned right here in these episodes and to join the birth course and community full of pregnant moms just like you. I have to add a disclaimer that I am not a medical professional and I cannot provide medical advice. All of the information expressed in this podcast are based off of personal, professional, and educational experiences and are my own opinions. Please work with a provider you trust for medical advice during your pregnancy and birth. Reviewer of the week this week is Avita K, and she says, love. I like to determine quality, reliability, truthfulness of podcasts and blogs, etc., by listening to or reading about something they talk about that I've already researched and come to a conclusion on myself. The vaccine episode is what hooked me with this podcast. Everything was laid out effectively and succinctly and was exactly, all caps, exactly, in line with the research I'd found. And it was especially refreshing to hear the information given in an unbiased way. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Avita. Truly, that is the goal with my podcast. I hope those that are listening feel that way, that you guys get to make the decision. Really, present all of the information in front of you so that you guys can make an informed choice. I hope to be able to do a little bit of that today as well. And for those who are curious, maybe you hear that and you're like, oh, I didn't know you had a vaccine podcast. I will link to that in today's show notes as well in case you're curious and you want to go back and listen to that. It's certainly a hot topic, but not afraid to discuss it. So, okay. I think today's topic is going to be awesome because I think there's a couple of things that normally and naturally get left out when we talk about the first 24 hours after having a baby, what that really looks like. And I mean, I'm even guilty of this within the podcast. I talk to you guys about everything that you can expect right after baby's born and all of that, but I don't talk to you about maybe even like some of the sensations that are going to be happening to you and your body postpartum. Maybe I don't know, have missed a couple things with the baby, paperwork, that kind of stuff. I thought it would be nice to dive in and really give you kind of this like top-down visual of what it looks like to have a baby. Now, a lot of this is going to be geared towards hospital, although I'll make mention of like, so if you're at home, this would be this way or this would be that way. But also too, on top of that, as you're listening, obviously, if you guys are like, oh, you left this out, or I had to deal with this, or this is really going to be helpful to moms, email me, let me know. Hopefully, you guys have seen that. When that happens, when I've done a podcast episode and somebody's like, oh, hey, add this. Like we did the birth bag episode recently, and I was like, if there's anything you can think of, we've made those edits to the downloadable birth bag checklist, like full list. And a couple of those things, like they were like, oh, I didn't think to bring ibuprofen for my husband. Because he gets super bad, or Tylenol and ibuprofen. He gets really bad migraines. And we were at a hospital and they had medication, but they would not give it to him. Like they can't legally do that. So she's like, maybe add that kind of stuff in there. And then there was another one that said something about make sure that you pick your pediatrician before. And I'm actually going to talk about that a little bit today too, which is huge, like huge. I wouldn't have thought to put that on the checklist for like the birth bag list, but we absolutely added it because I think it has value. So if you guys hear on here and you're like, oh, I have something I want to add or something that needs to be updated or whatever, email me hello@myessentialbirth.com or you can send me a DM on Instagram @myessentialbirth. And I love, love, love when you guys come together, when we can come together as a community and help each other out as moms. So that is about all of that. And I hope today's episode is going to be super useful. I think it's going to bring up some things that you're going to be like, oh, okay, good to know. I will prepare for that. I hope some moms that are listening, you're like nodding your head like, yep, somebody should have told me that the first time. Let's dive in. But before I do that, one more thing. You guys, in case you have not been following me on Instagram, we are in the midst of creating our postpartum course. I'm hoping to have this available either by the end of the year or very early beginning of next year. But we're looking for feedback. We're looking for information. We want to hear the things that you had to deal with or you have questions about or concerns about. So if you want to be a part of that process, keep an eye out, especially on Instagram. I'm going to offer some opportunities to be on a just one-on-one call with me so that I can interview a couple of you moms and hear about what you have to say in regards to postpartum, what you need, what your concerns are. I want to make sure that we seriously hit everything that is being recommended or otherwise. So obviously, if you're in the Facebook group online with me and you've already joined the birth course, you've seen some of those questions and things. The list is long and I'm really excited. So keep following along here because this is what you guys have been asking for, a postpartum course. But today, let's jump into that first 24 hours postpartum. Postpartum just means that you've given birth to your baby. There's a lot that happens right after you give birth to your baby. And once we jump into all of that stuff that comes with just being a mom and dealing with baby postpartum. So first things first, you give birth to your baby and there's a couple of things that happen. Probably the first thing, at least on the provider's mind, is how they're going to handle the birth of the placenta. And if you're in a hospital setting, for example, this is called active management of third stage. This is the norm. This is like across the board, the protocol that is going to be taken here. I'm also going to link here in the show notes to the Pitocin for third stage when I talked about the active management of third stage and why or why not it would be a benefit or how that works for providers using Pitocin in the third stage of birth, even if you have had a completely unmedicated birth and have not used Pitocin prior to this part of your birth. So there's the active management, and what that looks like is a provider. It's just what it sounds like. It's like kind of like a hands-on approach. There's going to be fundal massage. There's going to be Pitocin that is used postpartum. If it looks like there's a lot of bleeding, there will be something called Cytotec that can be used as well. Postpartum hemorrhage is measured by the loss of 500 milliliters of blood or more within a 24-hour period. And so what they're doing is trying to obviously avoid that with this active management. So you've got the fundal massage, you have the Pitocin that they're using, and then they do something called cord traction. And that's just what it sounds like. They have a clamp that goes on the umbilical cord, and then they pull, they use that clamp that's on the cord, kind of put their hand on it and pull to help the placenta let go of the uterine wall and help it to be birthed out of the vagina. So another way that providers like kind of keep track of like how much blood loss is happening or not has to do with like they have the rags. They have a certain number of rags and they're using them to clean up postpartum. And if they're soaking so many, they're like, okay, yeah, we need more Pitocin. We need Cytotec, something like that. The other option, and I'm not going to go too crazy detailed into these things because I do that in some different episodes. For example, that one has to do with the third stage of birth, and I did an entire episode about that, but just stay with me here. I just want to make sure that I'm touching on all these things so that you guys have an idea of what you can expect postpartum. So then there's the physiological, like we're going to let the placenta do its thing on its own, let mom's body do its thing on its own, meaning that we kind of leave it alone. It's kind of like a watch and wait. So instead of doing like, okay, baby's here. Let's, you know, if you've got an IV, let's pump up the Pitocin or give her a shot in the leg if she doesn't have the IV. Instead of like jumping in and doing that, it's a watch and wait. It's like, let's see how she's bleeding. Let's do a little fundal massage. Are we seeing a lot of blood, a lot of clotting, that kind of thing? And then even utilizing some herbs to help if there is some postpartum stuff going on, or the use of the placenta or the placental cord. So the baby's cord, placental cord to the baby, you can actually cut off a piece of that, rinse it off, stick it in the cheek. It has a lot of oxytocin, which is that natural hormone that they're going for. We call it the love hormone, but the other thing that it does is it creates contractions. And so that's why postpartum, they would be thinking of giving you a shot of Pitocin because they want that uterus to clamp down really tight and help mom to not bleed a ton. So there's the two options. You can choose to do the active management of third stage, more hands-on, or physiological watch and wait, don't do anything unless you need the help. We also had a really neat question that came up recently in the private Facebook group for members that are in the My Essential Birth course. And the mom asked, she said, I am wondering what the effects of a shot of Pitocin postpartum, if I haven't had anything else, any other Pitocin and stuff, what does that do for breastfeeding, bonding, that kind of thing? And I love that that question got asked, because it's true that every single thing that we do has an effect on us, on our babies, on whatever. And so when we dug a little bit deeper, I did ask someone even on my team, I said, hey, will you look into this a little bit more and see what you can find? And both of us looking, and it was like, yeah, it does have an effect, and it can actually delay some, like maybe the latch goes good in the beginning, but a couple days later, it can have some effect on breastfeeding. Or if a mom has had Pitocin throughout the labor, that can have an effect on bonding and latching and breastfeeding success. And even interestingly enough, like how long a mother chooses to breastfeed can have, there are differences in what you've done during your labor experience. So anyways, those kinds of things are all things to think about prior. So after baby is born, you will have the birth of that placenta. They're making sure that there's no postpartum hemorrhage. They're keeping a really close eye on you, especially within those first 24 hours. But I want to talk about how long you have to be at your birthplace too in a little bit. If your placenta does not come off on its own, so say that they're doing all these things or they're leaving it by itself, and maybe there's even a piece or so left in there, which after you birth the placenta, your provider will look at it and they'll kind of look at the whole thing. Is all of it there? And if it's not all there, they have to make sure that all of it comes out of your body, because otherwise it can lead to infections and other issues. There's also something called placenta accreta, which is just make it sound really mellow. It's when your placenta decides it's going to grow into your uterine wall and not let go. And that can be a tricky thing that's going to require a dilation and curettage, or unless they can manually get it off. So if you are a mom that's had an epidural, this next part, if they're trying to get part of that placenta out, would be a lot less painful. But if you are a mom who's given birth naturally, the provider is going to put their entire hand, like sometimes all the way up to the elbow, into your body to try and manually remove the placenta should that be an issue. It's not extremely common, but it's not uncommon. So just so are you aware, that is something that you may or may not have to deal with postpartum. Postpartum tearing is obviously a thing. There's a lot of things that you can do to avoid or reduce the amount of tearing. But say that you do tear, there's the different degrees of tearing. So you've got first, second, third, fourth, right? First is like superficial, and then all the way to fourth. Fourth is like you've torn through everything and you're into bowels and things, and it's going to be a really trickier, longer recovery. So after you have given birth, if there is any stitching, the doctor is going to check you out, see what they need to do, let you know, make sure that you consent. Are you okay if I do this and this? And then there will be some Novocaine, which I don't want anyone to freak out. Even if you have had an unmedicated birth, it's likely you won't feel a lot of what is happening down there, at least with the like pinching of like the shots and stuff. You can, and it depends on where the tear is, but just know that there will be some numbing that happens, and then they do a little bit of stitching as well. Then there's the postpartum cleanup. So they've stitched mom and all that. Great. Now we've got to wipe down the legs and the bum and her arms and like whatever else has fluids and blood and all the fun stuff that comes with labor. As I'm recording this episode, I'm just wondering how many of you are like, I'm going to listen to something else and scroll on. Stay with me. But they do a wipe down, they change the pads, they change the sheets. If you're at home, it would be the same thing. Like maybe you gave birth on the bed and it is a little messy. They're going to change all of that and clean it up for you. And then after that, it's really normal, even as all of this is happening, actually, to get these shivers or like kind of this uncontrollable shaking from mom. There's a lot of different things that can contribute to it, but they a lot of times it has to do with like hormones and stuff. It's not because you're freezing. However, blankets, like warm blankets, can help comfort and maybe, you know, slow it down just a touch, but it's really normal. And so I just want you to be aware that there can be like this postpartum where your body is just shaking. And that's with or without if you've had epidural, anesthesia, any of that kind of stuff. It's just a normal physiological part of birth. And then there will be like the breastfeeding and the golden hour. And so with that, I kind of want to dive into some decisions that you have for baby. So that was the immediate, I've just given birth to my baby, what that looks like for mom. And now I want to talk just a touch about baby, because what's happening for baby, now say that you've given birth, the first thing that they're going to do is what's called an Apgar. And if you've had a baby before, you've probably heard of this. If you haven't, you probably haven't heard of this before. So Apgar stands for appearance, which has to do with the skin color of the baby. Are they red? Are they white? Whatever. The pulse. P is pulse or their heart rate. The G has to do with grimace or their reflexes. The A is for activity or their muscle tone. And then R is their responsiveness, basically how quickly or slowly they're breathing and how much effort it takes them to be able to do that. And each of these are given between 0 to 2. So it's kind of like if you've heard me talk about the Bishop score and it's ranked on this whatever. Apgar is for baby postpartum. They're given a score. And babies who have a lower Apgar sometimes need a little bit more help. And babies who have a higher Apgar are immediately given to mom. So it just is kind of how they decide how baby is doing. All of that's happening without you even knowing. So you've given birth. They're talking Pitocin and doing other things. Maybe you've got baby on your chest. Somebody in that room is keeping track of how baby is doing. Along with that, there's decisions like, do you want delayed cord clamping, immediate cord clamping? Immediate cord clamping is something that is typically done with the active management of the third stage of labor. So that's something to keep in mind. Immediate skin to skin, should you choose to have baby put on your belly or your chest, depending on how long your cord is and if you're doing delayed cord clamping. Immediate breastfeeding, and that doesn't mean that baby has to latch right away, but they can just be nuzzling on your breast, which helps for that physiological oxytocin and release of the placenta. Hepatitis B is another thing that you'll have to decide. These are things that are naturally offered, and so you'll have to sign a waiver should you choose to not utilize something like hepatitis B. Erythromycin is an eye ointment that is given to baby postpartum. You can choose to get that or not. If you choose to circumcise, then that would be done not immediately, but that is a decision that needs to be made prior to you leaving your birthplace generally. Obviously, if you're giving birth at home or you're out of hospital, this is something that can be done pretty quickly after birth, but not at that location. And then they have like a PKU test, which is a heel prick and a little bit of a blood test to see if they've got some sensitivities to the PKU stuff. And then there's vitamin K, which is the blood clotting factor. So vitamin K is what helps our blood clot. You can choose to get it or not. If you have a baby that's being circumcised, that's a requirement, because any kind of surgical procedure has a much higher risk of bleeding out, and they want to make sure that that blood is clotting. So in comes the vitamin K. Now, after that immediate postpartum, so that's the stuff for mom, that's kind of the stuff for baby, and obviously there's a lot there, and I go over these things in other episodes and definitely within the birth course. So if you're curious about any of that, research, even if you typed in some of these things like hepatitis B or postpartum decisions, my essential birth, any of that, pregnancy and birth made easy, it should just come up with a simple Google search if you're searching for those. But we also have an option now when you go to myessentialbirth.com/podcast, there's a search bar at the top. And so if you type in any of those things that you're curious about, it should pop up with resources on the website. So let's talk about after that immediate postpartum. So all of those decisions and the things that I just talked about for baby, for example, whether or not you choose to have the hepatitis B or the erythromycin eye ointment or circumcision, all of that should be handled and thought about prior to you being at the birth, and you don't want to have to be making those decisions quickly. So benefits and risks to everything. Back to informed consent. So if you can, research those things and get really educated on them prior to being in your birth space. So now we've hit right after that stage. And there, so I want to talk to you about what happens after baby's here and we're all excited and breastfeeding and all the stuff that you normally hear happens. The next thing is to, so maybe you guys have heard about some of this, right? But like the fundal massage, it's like what comes after all of that fun stuff. So fundal massage is probably number one. Like every 15 minutes for about the first 2 hours, somebody's going to come and they're going to push on your belly and they're going to say, I'm so sorry. And they're going to check downstairs and see how much you are bleeding. You should probably have at that point like an ice pack, or I've seen them do like baby diapers. They just like open up the baby diapers, fill it with ice and stick it down there as an ice pack. But you should have some kind of soothing something down in that area and somebody that'll be checking on your bleeding pretty regularly right after. There's also, when you do start breastfeeding, there are after pains. And I don't even know if I've mentioned these on the podcast before, which is kind of crazy because that would be like 2 years of me not mentioning this. But after pains are real fun and they get better with every baby. And by better, I mean worse, a little more noticeable, a little more intense. And within the next couple of days, so after you have your baby, it takes a couple of days for these to go away and they kind of get a little bit stronger and a little bit stronger. And then after a couple of days, they start to slow down and go away. But they do, like, they're not super fun. And then every time you have a baby, every subsequent baby, those pains can be quite a bit worse. So I remember with my third, I was in bed, head in the pillow, crying on like day two, just like while we were nursing. I'm like, it's going to be okay, but this hurts so bad. And so some things that you can do, I'll have a link for this in the show notes as well. And you can just get it on Amazon, but it's called After Ease. It's an herbal tincture, and that's supposed to be really calm and soothing. Again, something I learned about after having my third baby, yay me. So I want to share that with you. Pillows are something that you can like put a little bit of pressure there while you're nursing. Any kind of warmth I felt makes it feel a little bit better. So those are some things that you can do to ease the after pains. But just know that it's like right when that baby latches for their feedings, like at the very beginning, and it just kind of continues on while you're nursing. It's just what it is because that baby is nursing, you're releasing oxytocin, and those after pains are helping your uterus to become smaller and tighter and go back to its normal shape and size. So they have a purpose. It's not just for fun. And I just want you guys to be aware of that. Okay, emptying your bladder. This is another thing that I think is good to be aware of. It's kind of funny because my first baby was a cesarean birth, and certainly they want you to pee and have a bowel movement before you leave your hospital when you have a cesarean, or if you have a vaginal birth, just before you leave your birthplace. But when I could not pee afterwards, they used the peri bottle with warm water to like put it down there so it would help me urinate. And so I forever thought that was what the peri bottle was for. I was like, oh, okay, it helps you like go to the bathroom when you can't go to the bathroom. It is not for that, although that is a great use for it. The point of the peri bottle is so that after you urinate or while you're urinating, you can be squeezing warm water down there so it's not so salty and painful, because downstairs is going to feel really raw and really uncomfortable. And if you have the peri bottle, then it kind of dissipates the amount of salt down there so it doesn't sting as bad. And that way you don't have to wipe. It's your own personal bidet. Did not know that. So I wiped with all of my kids and it feels like sandpaper, and I don't recommend that you do it. Get a peri bottle. Like I said, it kind of burns. It might be difficult too to use your abdominal muscles to pee, definitely to have a bowel movement. And a bowel movement they usually want you to have within 24 hours or before leaving your birthplace. Maybe if you're with your midwife and you're at your house and it, you know, they leave after a couple of hours, you would just keep track of that yourself and she's going to keep track of you. But that needs to happen. And so using muscles, even giving birth to your placenta, maybe I should have shared that too, like birthing your placenta, using, because they ask you, okay, give me a little push. So you give a little push and you feel a lot of swelling down there and you're like, no, I can't do this again. And then all of a sudden it's like, blah, blah, blah. That's the best description I can give of it. Anyways, it just kind of like falls out and you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad. Well, you have to use those muscles again for pooping. And when you're doing that, you're like, oh my gosh, like, is this going to be okay? Like, am I going to survive this? And yes, you will. Yes, it's going to be okay. I recommend eating a lot of prunes, a lot of leafy greens, fruits and vegetables, things that are going to help things move it. If you need to take a stool softener, that's an option too. Talk to your provider. But you definitely want to make sure that things are moving and that that happens shortly after birth, because you don't want to be constipated and then it will be painful. So just keep that in mind. And then obviously you're going to have bleeding that happens. So the lochia is what it's called, and it's this bright red, heavy bleeding that comes with a little bit of blood clotting. It's just kind of, think of like the tissue and stuff from your uterus and all, like there's just stuff that's got to work its way out. And so it's pretty heavy for the first 3 to 4 days. You'll be filling a pad every 2 to 3 hours. Obviously there's like warning signs and stuff to make sure hemorrhage isn't happening. Like if you're filling a pad every 10 minutes, like we've got a problem. So they'll give you all of that information at your birthplace before you leave, but that's what you're looking for. Like those first 3 to 4 days are really heavy, as you might imagine, like a really heavy period might be. And then it kind of slows down a little bit, 10 to 15 days, and then a couple weeks out. You do bleed for a couple of weeks. We always joke about the sexy underwear, the sexy mesh underwear that they give you at the hospital. Your midwife can have them too, even if you're at home or at a birth center. But basically, it's really easy underwear to get into and a nice big pad. And we even recommend using some Depends. I can put a link for Depends in the show notes as well. So all of that is stuff that's going to be happening postpartum. Then, and that's kind of like before you would move to a recovery room if you were at a hospital. So let's talk about what it looks like when you move to your recovery room. So obviously, if you're at home, that's maybe moving to your bed like I did. But if you gave birth in your bed, I don't know, maybe it's changing the sheets and you get to stay in your bed, which is awesome. But after you move, you're going to get hopefully a really nice meal because you're going to be starving and you're going to get to shower because you're really going to want to do that and it's going to feel so good. And I'll tell you as a doula, like right after mom gives birth, because moms are just starving right away and it can take a while to get to the recovery room, like to switch rooms. So I am always like, here's some crackers, here's a granola bar, here's, you know, whatever, and making sure that they have water. So partners, pay attention to that. That's something you can do right away. But you should get like a nice hot meal at some point once you move over to the recovery room, and then you get to shower too. I kind of put on here on the outline that I was like, you get rest. Haha, right? Like some of it, especially if you're in a hospital. But the truth is, I mean, you're going to have the blood pressure cuff going off however often. You're going to have nurses coming in to check on you. At some point, you'll have people coming in to check on the baby. I mean, every hour or so, you're going to have people coming in. A hospital is not a good place for rest. It's just the way that it is. You do not need to stay for 24 hours. So if mom and baby are well, that's an option for you to consider. Of course, speak with your provider. There's going to be other things that have to happen. Like if your baby's being circumcised, you'll have to stay. If you tested positive for GBS, they're going to want to, you know, make sure the baby's doing okay. You need to have a bowel movement before you leave. There's a couple of things that they're going to require. And so you can have that conversation, but you can check out early too. In fact, I think with our second, we were out of there within like, it was less than 12 hours. For sure. I want to say it was about 6. We were out of there pretty quick and I was happy to be home. But anyways, you can choose. And obviously if you're at home, no worries. You get to stay right there and it's the best thing in the world. Okay. Baby can choose. You can choose to have the baby room in, or if you feel like you want a break and that's part of your story or part of your plan, then you can choose baby to go to the nursery. And with that, you get to decide too. Like you can be really clear, even if baby goes to the nursery, like no bottles, no formula, or yes, bottles, yes, formula. Like you get to decide all of that. You should have a pediatrician that's going to come check on baby. They kind of do a full workup. And so that is why it is such a good idea to have a pediatrician prior to them being in your birth space postpartum, especially the pediatricians at the hospital. That doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be your pediatrician unless you choose a pediatrician and tell them which hospital and when you're going to be there, all of that kind of stuff. Some of you may have heard my story about not choosing a pediatrician with my first and how that went down. But basically, I had chosen for that first baby to not do a couple of the vaccines. And I had the provider come in who was going to be circumcising my baby. He's a pediatrician. And he just railed me like so hard about how what I was doing was so unsafe for my baby, and he couldn't, and I was just sitting there like trying to take it and just started bawling because I'm like, I was just in labor for like 36 hours. I had a cesarean birth. That wasn't part of my plan. I'm trying to do what's best for my baby. Like I just was like, I couldn't take it. And his demeanor kind of changed. Like you could feel his like, oh shoot, like maybe I shouldn't have said that, but he was still, you know, stern with his commitment. Anyways, and he left and the nurse was excellent. She just came right up to me and she's like, it's okay. And you don't have to choose to do any of that. And like, don't worry. And you're not a bad mom. And I was just bawling uncontrollably. So make sure, just like a provider for yourself, that you're choosing a pediatrician that is going to be on the same page with you for what you want for your baby and be supportive, because it matters in those postpartum times. So newborn testing. There is going to be some stuff that comes up for baby. They definitely want to do like a hearing screening. And then there's just some other things that like they want to check reflexes and all of that. Like they want to check the weight. They want to do all that normal kind of stuff. So all that's going to happen within that time too. They're going to offer baby a bath. You don't have to do that. In fact, we say because of the vernix and everything, and it's actually recommended that you wait for that first bath. You can wait a week or more if you'd like. Baby is not dirty. They don't come out gross or anything. They can be wiped off from any blood or whatever else, but they don't need a full-on bath. There's a lot of benefits to waiting on that. And then all the other stuff that I talked, like the baby's weight, for example, it's really normal for a baby to come out weighing a certain amount and then to lose some of that weight and then gain it back within a week. So they want to make sure that the weight gain is kind of happening even a little bit before you leave. So there's that initial, like, here's how much baby weighs, the initial drop, and then they want to make sure that, or just keep track of baby's weight before you leave. But know that it's normal for them to lose some weight from the whole birth process and not being in the womb anymore and all that stuff. And then you'll probably set the next appointment for baby postpartum. So even though mom, when she leaves the hospital, won't see her provider for 6 weeks, and that is different at a home birth or birth center setting, midwives do see you before the 6 weeks and they check in with you a little bit earlier in between during that time. But even though moms, the majority of the time, if you leave the hospital, you're not going to talk to your provider unless there's something that comes up for you until the 6 week postpartum visit. Babies, however, are going to be seen pretty close to leaving the hospital. And there's a couple of milestone appointments that happen between when mom leaves and sees her provider again. And then you'll have to make sure that your car seat is all set to go. Some hospitals are big sticklers on it where they're like, let's see it. Is it put in right? All of that. Others are like, oh, good, you brought the car seat. Good, then you can go home with your baby. And then there is the paperwork. So you have to fill out some stuff for baby, like stuff for their birth certificate and their social security. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, parents maybe don't choose a name before they give birth. Like, you have to give them a name before you leave the hospital if you're going to put it on the paperwork and all that. I know we waited a little bit with one of them. I can't remember which one. But anyways, and with our third, we didn't even, I assumed it was a girl. So yes, we had a boy name, but we had not decided on a boy name. We had a girl name. So all of that and the social security card information. And then there's like release forms that mom and dad have to sign. I didn't even include that. Actually, after you have your baby, and if you're in the hospital, they'll give you like the bands for mom and baby and for dad, for him to be able to have like the hospital ID bands on. And then on top of that, they should provide you with some kind of postpartum packet, whether that's a workbook or a bunch of like printed off sheets or information and things. It should give you like warning signs and when to call your doctor and how to take care of your baby postpartum and how to take care of yourself downstairs and what bleeding is normal and that kind of stuff. So that's everything that should happen before you leave the hospital or your birthplace. And I thought too, it would be important to have kind of a word on visitors because, okay, well, four words. You get to choose. Did you hear that? Because you get to choose. I feel like that's so important for you to hear right now. But visitors can come at any time. So you might choose to have people there during your labor. Maybe you've got your mom or your sister, your the whole shebang. Like maybe you've got everybody there. Maybe that'll depend on the birthplace and illness and all that kind of stuff too. We know that we saw all that during 2020, but you can choose to have them there during the labor. You can choose right after you've pushed that baby out. Okay, send the family in for all the stitching and the whatever. And we want everybody to see them brand new. You can wait until the stitching and you're all cleaned up and you can have them come in. Or you can wait until you've skipped over into that recovery area. Or you can wait until you're at home. I think the point is do not do it for the whole people-pleasing portion of it. That is a very sacred time. I know people get really uppity about it. Maybe I will too as a mom. Maybe I'll be like, but I want to see that baby so bad. I hope not. I hope I'm really respectful of my kids and that special sacred time. but you don't get to do this very often, you know? And those first couple hours or just right after that baby's born, maybe it is the perfect thing to have your whole family gathered around. And I know situations where it's going to be better if it's just mom and dad. And that's okay. So think about that before labor happens. Have a really, really in-depth conversation, good communication with your birth partner about what you expect, what you're comfortable with, why and how it's going to be. And make sure that they're in a space to protect that. And then utilize the birth team if you need to make sure that those things are respected. That's actually one of my favorite parts of like nurses and midwives and birth assistants. They are so good at protecting mom, and they will take, they'll like take the rap for it. They won't say, oh, they don't want you in there right now. Sorry, you can't go in. It'll be, you know what? We're still checking them out. We need to whatever, whatever. We're going to give them this amount of time. We need you to come back in a little bit. They're just so good about that. And I mean, the thing about it is, like, you might be thinking, yeah, but like, oh my gosh, like my mom's going to be so upset if I do that, or, you know, I'm going to hear about this forever. And maybe that's true. But if that is important to you, I promise you're not going to regret deciding that this is the right decision for you, whatever that looks like. So trust me, don't learn the hard way like I did. I had everybody in my birth space with that first birth, and I was excited about it, but then it was really distracting. And as much as I love my mom, that was like tough in some ways. And so, and with my third, like we had my husband's parents were in the room when I gave birth, and it just, you have to choose to create a birth space that's going to be right for you. And that goes for that sacred postpartum time too. So that's my word on that. Okay. So all of that happens and you're ready to leave and go to your home, wherever your birth space is. And here's kind of the aftermath of that. I feel like even going out into the light after giving birth is just like, oh, like what just happened? So I think you might feel a little out of it, especially as a first time mom. I remember I was just like, what just happened? Your milk might not be in yet, which is totally normal. It's usually about day three that your milk comes in. So you're probably leaving your birthplace with colostrum. You're tired, you're sore. All of that is very normal. You might be completely elated too, because on top of all that, you've got a beautiful new baby in your arms and you're a new mom. You can also feel overwhelmed, and that is normal too. I remember leaving the birthplace with my first baby. I had a cesarean, and so I was there for 3 days. 3 days I had help. 3 days I had people checking on me and my baby, and like we were doing okay. And they sent us home, and I was like, wait, you trust me to be able to go home and be able to take care of this baby? Like, I had some serious concerns about that. I didn't have any training. Nobody told me all the things to do. Like, I was supposed to keep this baby alive somehow. And I did, and you will too, but it's okay to feel overwhelmed. It's normal to feel overwhelmed. And I will tell you, with my subsequent babies, I was like, get me out of this birth space. I can do this. I know what I'm doing. Let me go home. So I hope that that'll be the case. If maybe you felt that way the first time and you're listening, just know that you'll probably be really on top of it the next times. It's okay to like not feel sure about this whole new life that is in front of you. That's really normal too. But if some of those thoughts, and not to go into the details of like baby blues versus postpartum and all that kind of stuff, just know that your hormones are going to be changing and shifting during the next couple days. In fact, once you hit about that day three and your milk does come in, there's also some hormones. You have like a massive hormone drop that happens with that. And so it's normal to kind of feel a little more overwhelmed and even anxious, or just there's a lot that happens on that day three. So just know that it's coming. And then baby blues are actually a very normal thing too. And that does not last as long as like if you've got what you're thinking are baby blues by 6 weeks postpartum, that's not baby blues. Just know that like some of these fluctuations in hormones are totally normal postpartum. And I also want you guys to print out the Edinburgh scale. This is one example of how this works. So I'm going to include the Edinburgh scale link in the show notes. I'm also going to include, and I'll link to the podcast I did with Karina Robinson. We talked about birth trauma and how to heal from it, but she also included a different version of that, like how to check on yourself postpartum. She included a different version of that and a link to it. So I'm going to link to that in the show notes today as well. I want to remind you guys too, once you are at home and all of that, like it's really important to talk, like talk and talk and talk. Talk about the birth, talk about it with your birth partner, talk about it with people who are supportive. If you have a postpartum doula, definitely share your birth experience with her. She's going to pick up on things that maybe you're not even noticing or that your birth partner doesn't catch. I'd say trust your mom gut a lot. If you're feeling like something's not right or I'm not doing well or that's not a normal thought, pay attention to that. Journaling, I think, is really, really excellent once you're home. Journal about the birth. Journal about how you're feeling each day. You can even keep a food log along with that because a lot of times if we're like, oh, I was so happy this day and I'm not this day, even just your paying attention to your nutrition and making a couple of adjustments that way can be helpful. So, but journaling is a really excellent way to heal from birth and just to help yourself kind of get regrounded once you're home. And then I want to kind of stress this too, that I think it's really, really important that communication happens with your birth partner, especially prior to postpartum. So this should happen during pregnancy about your expectations postpartum. And you want to hear about his too, because it's really easy to have, and I just talked with another woman on her podcast about this. It's really easy to have an idea in your head of how postpartum is going to be, or once you give birth to that baby, to know what you expect all of a sudden from your birth partner, but they didn't just give birth to a baby and they're not having to nurse to keep that baby alive or, you know, whatever it is that happens postpartum for you, it is a little different for dads. And so I think it's really important that you guys have those conversations prior, like, hey, I know that I'm going to need help in the middle of the night breastfeeding. Like if you could just, I don't want to feel like I'm doing it alone. If you could just get up with me, either that's like handing me the baby or getting me a glass of water or just asking me if I need anything, that would be really helpful. Or if you can take care of diaper changes during the day, or I know I'm going to need to nap and I'll sleep when the baby sleeps, but if you could just take the baby with you, you know, into the other room so that I can actually like get some rest. What are those expectations that you're looking at from your birth partner? Have that conversation before. And then two, I think it's a really good idea to keep like a list of like, here's the things I know that I like in my home to be done. And if these things are done, I will be able to rest better or to be more calm. And maybe that's like when my home is clean, when my dishes are done, when my laundry is done, the dogs are fed or walked or whatever that looks like. Make sure that you're having those conversations prior. And then just remember that there's a lot of normal here, even though it feels really crazy, and that you're doing great. In fact, you're doing a lot better than you think you are, and you are made to be able to not only give birth to your baby, but to be an excellent mother for that baby too. That's it for this week, but make sure you subscribe to the podcast so that you get notifications first as I drop new episode every week. And don't forget to head over to myessentialbirth.com for all of the free downloads mentioned here and to join the birth course and community serving pregnant moms just like you. If you enjoyed this and other episodes, I would love it if you would take a few minutes to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I read every single one and include one at the beginning of each episode. See you next week.